This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
NBA Finals, well, the finals are almost over, I have to say. Chris Graham here on the Street Knowledge Podcast, and yeah, I'm not giving you breaking news there talking about how the finals are just about over. You saw that yourself last night if you're an NBA fan. In a classic game, as the Cleveland Cavaliers led most of the second half, had a six-point lead with just about 3 minutes to go, 3:08 to go, but could not finish out. And the Warriors go on an 11-0 run to finish the game out. And a big three-pointer by Kevin Durant in the last minute. A couple misses by the Cavs. Some questionable strategy by the Cavaliers. And the Warriors are on the brink. 3-0 lead with the 118-113 win. And, you know, it's probably time. It's not too early with a 3-0 lead. To go ahead and talk about legacies, if you want to say. And there's been a lot of talk, a lot of writing the last few days, even going into Game 3, which I thought was premature. And I think last night, my thought that it was premature to go ahead and declare the Warriors on the verge of a sweep, I think that thought on my part was valid. The Cavs were this close, and I'm holding my fingers as close together as I can, to finishing that game out. And getting back in the series, just like they did last year. They were down 2-0 last year, recall. The Warriors won 2 at home, big margins. They lose Game 3 and then blow a 3-1 lead. That's why we are where we are. But talking about legacy. So, you know, there's been a lot of undercurrent of media attention on, well, gosh, this is a super team, and these Warriors are going to, you know, be able to keep this super team together for a while because they're all young guys. You got, of course, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, the core of that team. And they're going to be together for a while. I mean, I assume that's the case. I assume that you're going to see these guys want to stay together, you know, maybe sacrifice their NBA salary money for other means, right? They can sacrifice for sponsor dollars or just in general say, you know, at some point, $10 million a year for how many ever years is enough for me to live on for a long, long time, very, very comfortably. Do I need double that to go somewhere and maybe not win championships? So that's the case. These guys are young. So, you know, wow, but it's no fair the way the things worked out. This team that had already won a championship, won 73 games last year, lost Game 7, that they could get they could qualify to get Kevin Durant. You know, they could basically figure out a way under the salary cap to get Kevin Durant. Of course, with the big boom in the salary cap last year, with the NBA TV contract money coming in all at once, that's what in part allowed that as well. And plus, Kevin Durant saying, "Hey, I'll sacrifice a little bit of money so I can go play with a team that I think has the best chance to win." And now you look at this team and say, "Yeah, they took the Cavs' best shot last night." Yeah, it is a little unfair. I mean, you know, you had LeBron James 39-11-9. You had Kyrie Irving 38 points, 13-15 inside of 6 feet, you know, making all these drives to the basket and, you know, a lot of hero basketball, but it worked. And just like you did last year in the finals, right? It's, you know, Kyrie and LeBron games 5, 6, and 7. That's what, you know, led the Cavs back last year. So, okay, that's, you know, that's a pretty good shot. 39-38 from two stars. At home, six-point lead, 3 minutes to go. They should win that game, and you know that's how good the Warriors are, that they could take the best shot of defending champion, pretty damn good team, and still come out ahead because they've got the depth. They've got Steph Curry, who had 13 rebounds last night. The littlest guy on the court had 13 rebounds last night, in addition to what he did, you know, shooting the ball and dishing. I think he had 6 assists. He had Kevin Durant cold and quiet for long stretches of the game, but he gets hot at the right stage and finishes with 30-plus, I think, with 31 with that last three. And, you know, the stat of the night to me seems to be that LeBron James played 46 minutes, was plus 7, which means in the 46 minutes he was on the court, the Cavs were ahead of the Warriors by 7 points, and they still lost by 5. He was only out 2 minutes. That means they were minus 12 the 2 minutes he was off the court. That is a stat of the night, a stat of the year. Just go ahead and wrap it up. That's how valuable he is, and also how depleted the roster is around him. So yeah, unfair. It's totally unfair that the Warriors are so deep and the Cavs are not. Now, this is a narrative that's there now, but wasn't there when the season started. In fact, even when they were putting this dream team together, because it wasn't just as simple as let's go add Kevin Durant to what we already had. Yes, they added to the core of Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. Now, let's also point out those guys are all-stars already, but none of those guys were highly regarded guys coming out of college. Draymond Green fell to the second round. He's now an Olympic player. He's now an all-star player. But he wasn't seen that way coming out of college. Steph Curry played at Davidson, couldn't even get a scholarship from his father Dell's alma mater, Virginia Tech, played at mid-major Davidson. Mid-major is actually questionable when Davidson was at the time, when Steph Curry was at Davidson. They weren't a mid-major then. And Klay Thompson played at Washington State. And we're not talking about, again, guys with huge pedigree. They developed in the NBA. But they weren't number one picks. Now, there is a team in this finals with two number one overalls, and that's the Cavaliers, actually. LeBron James and Kyrie Irving. Irving, you don't think of as being a number one overall because, you know, he didn't come out with the ballyhoo. But and then you know, Kevin Love was pretty well regarded coming out of college, but no, not expected to be a major superstar. But then early in his career with Minnesota, established himself as such, and then engineered his way to the Cavaliers super team. And you know, the idea at that time was that threesomes were the best super team, and that dated back to the 80s, if you want to say. You know, those Showtime teams had Kareem and Worthy and Magic Johnson. The Celtics had McHale and Parrish and Bird. They built around those guys. There were other players that were good around those guys, but those were the cores. The Bulls had Jordan and Pippen, and then either Horace Grant or Dennis Rodman. I mean, you know, you start thinking that's how teams have been built for a long time, three. And so the Warriors already had their three, and they added a fourth in Kevin Durant. And that's what's so unfair. And Durant coming out of college was number two pick, and after Greg Oden, who was only a bust because of injuries. Greg Oden was expected to be a star player out of that draft, and as was Kevin Durant. So how unfair is it, though? I mean, you know, when the Warriors got Durant, they had to get rid of Harrison Barnes, who was he's not Durant, but he was a key member of their teams that got better, won a championship, lost in Game 7, won 73 games before losing Game 7. You know, you had some role players that were in that mix. Festus Ezeli comes to mind. Again, not a guy that you're building a team around, but played a valuable role as a second-tier player for that team. You know, you had to sacrifice depth, which had seemed to be the strength of those Warriors teams the last couple of years. So you had to sacrifice your depth for going all in with those four, plus building a couple guys around them. And so that was the roll of the dice that the Warriors did. Now, the same thing. Cleveland's in the same boat. I mean, you know, you've got some pieces. Obviously, you've got their power troika of LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love. You know, hard pressed to say that there's a better threesome in the NBA, even whatever combination of three you put together with the Warriors. You know, Durant and Curry, great. I'm not sure that either Draymond or Klay Thompson as either the third wheels adds up to what the Cavaliers have in terms of their three. But then finding those fourth and fifth and beyond elements has been the problem for Cleveland. They tried to pick up Deron Williams this year, one of those release and sign veteran kind of deals. They traded for Kyle Korver to hit the open three. Missed an open three last night with a chance to extend the lead in the last minute. Something that LeBron James is getting criticized for some reason. He passed the ball away to an open three-point shooter. Michael Jordan did that a couple times. Worked out okay for the Bulls. Steve Kerr was one of the guys he actually passed open shot to. John Paxson was the other. Both those situations worked out for the Bulls. So unfair. Is it unfair that the Warriors were able to get Kevin Durant? I would say no. And it's not even close to being a 50-50 in this one, as far as I'm concerned. You build what you can build. Now, LeBron James has tried to downplay, oh, yeah, you know, when I went to Miami, it was different. Miami wasn't great when I got there, and we built up something. But when he and Dwayne – he joined Dwayne Wade and then convinced Chris Bosh to join, and they all, you know, all worked out their that power threesome. And And they played their way to a couple of titles in Miami. Remember, though, when they got together, before they played a game, they were doing this big event at the arena in Miami where they talked about not one, not two, not three, not four. They can say now that they didn't think they were a super team, but they were a super team from the second that Pat Riley put the ink on those contracts for those guys. That's what you try to build in the NBA. You try to build a super team. You know, the hard route to go is the route that the Boston Celtics have been trying to go. The Celtics overachieved massively this year to get to the Eastern Conference Finals without really a star player. Let's be honest, nothing against the roster, but there's not a you know, a guy that you know, you can say is a, you know, I'll just say it, there's not a legit top tier star on that team, and I don't care you know, the characterization there, and a lot of good players, but you know, nobody that I'm going to get criticized for that. But the Wizards, same thing. You know, I love the local team, the Wizards. You know, John Wall, love John Wall. John Wall is a top five Eastern Conference player, but he's your best guy, and you got a lot of role players built around him. Bradley Beal, some folks, Washington Wizards fans, hardcores, think, oh yeah, Bradley Beal, he's a top 10 player. Now, you know, if you're a Wizards fan, you like to say that, that's fine, but he's not. And you know, they achieved well to get to Game 7 against Boston in the semifinals of the Eastern Conference. Great for them. The Spurs, Greg Popovich, I mean, built around David Robinson, Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker. You know, they got LaMarcus Aldridge. They developed Kawhi Leonard, came from nowhere, developed him into a star. Clearly now with Parker and Ginobili, probably on their way out. I mean, Ginobili certainly, I think he's 39 this year. He's got to be, if not at the end, it's close to the end of his career. Parker still got a couple years left, and I'm not sure if he's got a couple years of being the Tony Parker that could drive you to a championship. All the talk now about Chris Paul, maybe now a free agent leaving the Clippers and joining up with the Spurs. That would be interesting. You put him and Aldridge and Kawhi Leonard, you got a, you know, point guard who's one of the top three or four point guards in the NBA still, in my opinion. You got Kawhi Leonard at a very deep position at small forward, but certainly one of the top three or four small forwards in the NBA. LaMarcus Aldridge, when he's healthy and when he's motivated, one of the best three or four power forwards in the NBA. That could be an interesting little power troika that Popovich, who is an expert coach, could put together, put a couple of three-point shooters with that group and see what they can do with the Warriors in the next few years. Houston is interesting, just the fact that Mike D'Antoni was able to figure out how to use James Harden the best. If they can get a player or two around him, that could be a fun team to watch next few years. But the standard to gold standard right now is going to be Golden State. There's no question about that. They're going to win either Game 4 or Game 5. It's not going to get to Game 6. Let's just say that. They're going to win this championship second in 3 years. They're going to be a favorite to win next year. Probably for the next 3 or 4 years, they will be a favorite to win the NBA going into the season. They're going to be the favorite. Cleveland, I still got to think, is going to be the favorite in the Eastern Conference at least next year, maybe the year after. I assume that LeBron James probably has 3-4 more years left at this top level. He's played a lot of basketball. He came out of high school. So even though he's 32, 33 years old, he's older in terms of legs because he didn't play 4 years of 25 games a year. He played, you know, those first 4 years, he played 80 plus a year. He's played Olympics. He played all the commitments that he's had over the years. So a lot of tread on those tires. But I still think at least 2 years, maybe 3 years at the top level for LeBron James. That means that the Cavaliers have to be a favorite. In the East, at least next year, again, maybe a couple more years, they can keep their threesome together. They can keep Love happy and Kyrie Irving happy. And I can't presume why they couldn't. The NBA, I think the NBA does better when there is an established order, I guess you can say. I remember, I grew up when the NBA had been struggling. People might not remember this, but the NBA Finals used to be on tape delay on CBS. That means that the games didn't air until after the local news at 11:30. I remember that. I was a young basketball fan, 1979, 1980. I was 7 or 8 years old, staying up late to watch NBA Finals games after 11:30 Thankfully, those finals usually were after the school year was over, so I was able to do that. But, you know, the NBA grew because of the fact that the Celtics got good again, the Lakers were good, those great teams, and the 76ers, Julius Erving and his group, Moses Malone. I mean, there were some really good teams there in the 80s that you just knew, okay, Boston was going to play Philadelphia in the Eastern Conference Finals. L.A. was probably going to be in the Western Conference Finals. Some of those teams in Houston actually went to a couple finals in the early 80s. Some combination of those teams were going to be playing for the NBA title at the end of the year. If you wanted to get to that level, you had to play through them. You know, the Lakers, the Celtics eventually faded as their guys got older. The Pistons beat them a couple of years, played the Lakers. The Pistons won a couple of straight championships. Eventually, the Bulls beat the Pistons. You know, the Bulls won three straight. Then Jordan retired briefly to play baseball. You had the Rockets win two straight. Then Jordan came back, won three more. Then you had San Antonio for a while, was one of those defining teams, along with, again, Detroit, the second version of Detroit back in the early 2000s. You had a couple of years, again, where the Lakers and Celtics got back to the top of the mix. The Spurs were always part of this mix. And now we kind of fast forward now to this three straight years, first time in history that we've got two teams competing in the NBA Finals three straight years against each other, the Cavs and the Warriors. It's a good thing. You know, if you're the Washington Wizards, you know you've got to beat Cleveland. So you know now. But the NBA Finals aren't even over. You know now. You've got to go out and do something free agent-wise, trade-wise, draft-wise to get yourself a little bit better to be able to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference. If you're Boston, same thing. Danny Ainge, Brad Stevens, they know what they got to do. They got to figure out something. They got the number one pick, which helps. Certainly helps, either as using the pick itself or using it for trade leverage. You know, you've got that situation going on. Out west, I mentioned San Antonio. I mentioned Chris Paul. You know, if Chris Paul leaves the Clippers and ends up joining San Antonio, wow, there you go. There is a formidable foe for the Warriors, who, again, would still be the favorites in the Western Conference. But, you know, San Antonio with Greg Popovich is always a threat. Houston, James Harden with Mike D'Antoni as the coach. If they can figure out a way to get another piece or two around him, that's a dangerous team. Oklahoma City with Westbrook. Now, they've only got Westbrook, but, you know, he is quite a piece to build around. And, you know, so if you can – Billy Donovan and Russell Westbrook, if they can figure something out, or if Westbrook decides, hey, I'm going to Durant and get the heck out of here and join another super team group, then we'll see what happens there too. But, you know, going in, these are the standards right now. I think where the NFL suffers now, the NFL has been enforcing parity for a long time now. Fortunately for the league, and unfortunately for people who hate the Patriots have figured out how to beat the parity system. They've been consistently good for a good while. Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, dating back to 2000, 2001, have consistently gone into each season as a favorite to go to the Super Bowl. Other than that, you know, you can beat Carolina in 15-1 one year and 6-10 the next. You know, we know that New England will be a favorite again next year, but will Atlanta either be a Super Bowl favorite or a team that doesn't make the playoffs? And outside of figuring out how to beat the Patriots, you know, from one year to the next, the target seems to be moving so much that it can be a little frustrating. The NBA doesn't suffer from such. The NBA has figured out how to keep its salary structure in such a way to also allow for its players and teams to build continuity. That's what makes, to me, that's why the NBA is doing so well financially, honestly. Baseball, to a great degree, has done the same thing. You know, I'm a fan of the Washington Nationals. The Nationals have been able to keep a core of guys together. They're three-time division champions dating back to 2012, so three times in 5 years. You know, you've been able to have the Giants good for a stretch dating back 5 or 6 years. The Dodgers have been good for 3 or 4 years in a row, at least now, with their current group. The Orioles have been consistently good with Buck Showalter as a manager dating back 5 or 6 years. You know, there's some teams that have just consistently been good. The Cubs are getting to that stage now. The Cubs, I know, are struggling right now, but they're going to be back in the mix this year. No question about that. Houston's actually been building up the last couple of years towards maybe a sustained period of you know, strong play. This is not bad. The fact that the Warriors and Cavs are as good as they are is not bad. It's actually very good for the league. It establishes familiarity. It establishes benchmarks. And I think it's, you know, for fans, you don't have to be a long-time hardcore fan like me watching NBA games in November to know in June when the teams are meeting up in the finals, hey, Warriors, Cavs, who do I like? I know that the best players in the world are in this game. You know, who am I going to pick? That makes it easier for the fans. And, you know, getting back, I guess the original question is, you know, is Durant going to the Warriors at all unfair? I think I answered that a long time ago. Hard to imagine that it's any more unfair than Cleveland being able to lure LeBron James back, being able to trade for Kevin Love after drafting Kyrie Irving. I mean, you know, give credit to these groups for putting these teams together is what I'd say. Big fan of, you know, the seeing a team grow and build. And these teams have been able to do that. So I'll still be watching with interest Game 4 coming up this week. Maybe a Game 5. Not sure about that. Love NBA basketball. Also, the NBA postseason awards coming up June 26th, a Monday night. Interest from that standpoint because former University of Virginia star Malcolm Brogdon is a favorite for the Rookie of the Year award, Milwaukee Bucks rookie. Definitely be watching that night to see if our guy Malcolm, Uncle Moses, Humble Moses, gets recognized as a lot of us think he should as the Rookie of the Year. See who the MVP is between Harden and Westbrook. I mean, there's a lot of intrigue there. And, you know, it used to be those awards trickled out in the last few weeks of the playoffs, but now they're doing it all in one night. Kind of like that idea. I didn't know that until I just looked it up here a few minutes ago, but I like that idea. Let's give some drama to it. And I'll be watching. I'm sure you will be as well. Thank you for listening to our podcast. I am Chris Graham signing off here for Street Knowledge. And as we always say, if you can't be good, be good at it.